Now, it's well known that most couples face their most serious challenges during the first 5 years of marriage. Most divorces occur during the first 5 years of marriage, with the highest incident of divorce coming in year three. The most common problems which lead to separation and divorce are, in random order, balancing job and family, frequency of sexual relations, debt brought into marriage, husband's employment, finances, expectations about household tasks, constant bickering, communication with spouse, problems with parents or in-laws, lack of time spent together. According to research done by the Center for Marriage and Family at Creighton University, the top three issues for couples during the first 5 years of marriage are time, sex, and money. In this section, I will offer thoughts, ideas, resources, and suggestions for how to pastorally address these problems. That being said, this is not intended to be a monologue. I invite you to chime in and offer your comments and suggestions, with the goal being that together we can work to strengthen and maintain marriages. So to that end, I'm going to do things a little differently than how Paul originally suggested. I just plan to do a section at a time, stop and have a little discussion, then the next section, then the next section. There's a handout up here for you to take notes. It's just a loose outline of what I'll be doing. So time. The Creighton University study noted that time together was the foremost problem for couples in the first 5 years of marriage. Oftentimes, newly married couples believe that once they are married, they will spend lots of time together. After all, it will just be the two of them. They also believe that combining households will simplify life and save time. What they discover is something altogether different. During the week, most couples struggle to balance family and work. If such work pays the bills, it's tempting to consider it to be the top priority. One may love his or her work, but if he or she wishes to advance, more education may be required. One cannot work or study if one is sick, so exercise needs to take place. Given this, a typical weekday might have this schedule. Up at 5 a.m., in the gym by 5:30. Enter the office by 7 a.m. Leave the office by 5:30 p.m. Grab dinner on the go. Attend a graduate class beginning at 7 p.m., which goes till 10 p.m. Home to study, bed at 12:30 or 1 o'clock in the morning. When the weekend rolls around, there's golf with the boys, Pilates with the girls, beers with your buddies, coffee with her friends, provided you don't have to go into work for a few hours or write a paper for class. When Sunday arrives, there's church and dinner at the folks. But whose folks? His folks? Her folks? Both? Brunch with one set, dinner with the other? Next thing you know, it's Monday, and it starts all over again. Throw in a baby or two, and where is the time for the couple to be the couple? Answer, there isn't any time. Even though they live in the same house, the couple spends virtually no time together. Work, education, friends, activities, and extended family become the mistress who steals time from the spouse. Trouble is brewing. When couples don't spend time together, they often end up fighting during the little time that they do have together. They argue about the day-to-day issues, unpaid bills, unclean houses, unruly children. Is there any wonder? No. When you fail to spend time together, it is impossible to feel connected as one. Arguing about who's doing what around the house is really just a symptom of deeper problems, such as isolation, loneliness, and resentment. You argue about the mundane issue when your emotional needs aren't being met. The Coke can left in the living room becomes a symbol of your lack of caring for your spouse. When spouses argue a lot, they don't feel like spending time together. In fact, they want to spend as little time together as possible. Unfortunately, avoidance only makes matters worse. More distance, more tension, less cooperation, more conflict, and so on. Of course, some couples who don't spend time together don't argue when they are together. They simply have little to do with each other. They resign themselves to lead parallel but separate lives. They start to fall out of love with each other. They become strangers. I just don't love him anymore, she says. We've grown apart, he says. Distance in relationships is love's silent killer. So what can be done about it? Well, couples need to spend time together, and carving out time together may be difficult, but pastors can help. Big suggestion always is the date night. And date nights are helpful, and we should encourage that, but they are insufficient to the task. No couple can survive on one night a week together. more time is needed. So to that end, in addition to the date night, I would encourage having a Manhattan together a day. And what do I mean by that? When I was a boy, my father would come home from work at about 5:15 p.m. Dinner was served promptly at 6. From 5:15 to 6 o'clock, my mother would finish dinner preparations. My father would sit at the counter in a kitchen chair. They would each drink a Manhattan. This was their time to check in with each other, to discuss their day, important issues, successes, failures, and frustrations. It was sacred time. As children, we knew not to interrupt unless we were vomiting or bleeding. Our time to talk was 6 p.m., the dinner hour. 5:15 was their time, and they had that time every day until death parted them. Couples can also team up to spend time together. They can cook supper together, go to the store together, commute to work together, clean the house together, go for workouts together. Do as much as you can together as a team and use that time to converse. Couples can also reassess their priorities. It's easy to take on additional activities or commitments without dropping others. Before long, our schedules are so full, we have no time for one another. Ask what can be eliminated from the schedule so that real time together might take place. They can also take time to connect when apart. It's easy to send your spouse an email or a text, give him or her a phone call over the lunch hour, meet for lunch if possible, Skype instead of calling. While not every couple will be able to make this work, if you can take advantage of it, do. It's very helpful. Couples should also establish boundaries. Time together needs to be time together. To that end, set boundaries and ground rules. Cell phones, laptops, iPads are useful tools, but they are the enemy of time together. So too the television and movies, for the attention is on the screen and not on the spouse. So some helpful scriptures encouraging couples to spend time together. One would be Genesis 2:18. It is not good that the man should be alone. I will make a helper fit for him. Got to spend time with her. She's the helpmate. Genesis 2:24, therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. I find that to be a helpful scripture when talking with couples about establishing boundaries and how much time are you going to spend with the extended family. And say you've already made the decision. You've left mother and dad to be with your spouse. Deuteronomy 24:5, when a man is newly married, he shall not go out with the army or be liable for any other public duty. He shall be free at home 1 year to be happy with his wife whom he has taken. It's a nice encouragement for the husband and the wife. Ephesians 5:33, however, let each one of you love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. There's an aspect here of if you're not spending time with your spouse, to say to the husband, you know, you're only hurting yourself. She is one with you. She is your body. You are one flesh. And then Mark 10:9, what therefore God has joined together, let not man separate, and let not your activities and other things separate it either. Most newlyweds are at the beginning of their earning curve. They also are learning to understand and blend their individual attitudes toward money. All this can be stressful. In addition, many couples bring debt into the marriage. The average student loan debt, at least at the University of Iowa, $27,000. That's what you'll graduate with. And the average credit card debt is almost $5,000 per credit holder. So do the math. A couple could have a combined debt of somewhere between $60,000 to $65,000 on the day they say, I do. More debt is added on top of that with a car payment and possible home purchase, if they can swing that somehow. The second biggest course of frustration and money problem is money management. Once married, many couples choose to combine their finances into joint accounts. Problems arise when the couple realizes that their spending and saving habits are not identical. She'll pinch a penny till it burps. Money burns a hole in his pocket. At the end of the day, she finds herself uncomfortable with his loose spending means, and they are having a hard time earning and keeping money, and everyone's being annoyed. She hoards the money, he spends the money, and it's a big mess. So what can be done about this? Couples should compare their spending habits. Don't assume your spouse shares your beliefs about money. Your partner's spending and saving habits may surprise you. Watch out how he or she uses money. A free spender before marriage will probably be a free spender after marriage, and a saver before marriage will probably be a saver after marriage. Couples should have full financial disclosure. They need to be honest about income, debts, and money problems. They need to discuss financial strengths and weaknesses, perhaps even reviewing each other's financial records. Ideally, this should be done before the wedding happens so they know what they're taking into the marriage. Credit reports, they should have a clear idea what their credit rating is. That's how creditors will judge them. The aim should be to have both scores higher than 750, so you can land the lowest interest rates possible when you apply for a house loan, or any other kind of loan for that matter. If there is been a previous marriage, that needs to be discussed because your spouse from the previous marriage may have financial obligations such as alimony or child support. Those need to be known. Couples should avoid credit card debt. Best rule of thumb is if you can't pay for something with cash, you can't afford it. They should pay off their debts. If you have credit card balance, pay as much off as you can above the minimum each month. If you receive gift money, a bonus, income from a second job, or a tax refund, use that to pay down your debt. You can even make multiple payments during the month if you so desire and are able to swing it. The couple should appoint a treasurer. Decide which spouse will pay the bills and keep the books. This will often be the one who cares or worries more about finances. That is true. When we were first married, I kept the books. I had a little ledger, and I wrote everything down in a mechanical pencil, and I had my little calculator. Everything was great. And I grew weary of being asked, well, where's the checkbook at? What's going on in savings? So how are our investments doing? And finally, one day, I looked and I said, if you're so worried about it, perhaps you should do it. To which she said, okay. We got computer programs, spreadsheets. If you want to know how much money we spent on eating out in 1998, I can tell you. I can tell you where we went and what we paid for and what was on the menu. It's detailed. And so she knows where every penny is. And that's not to say I'm out of the picture on it. We have a regular finance meeting and where we discuss where we're at. But she's good at it, and I'm good at mowing the lawn. So it works out real well. Right? Couples need to make a budget, but a budget's only as good as if you are willing to stick with it. If you can make a budget and stick with it, God bless you, do it. Spend within your means. It's to be encouraged. So, and then some helpful scriptures, Proverbs 3, honor the Lord with your wealth and with the first fruits of all your produce, and Luke 12:15, take care and be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in abundance of his possessions. Hebrews 13:5, keep your life free from the love of money and be content with what you have, for he has said, I will never leave you or forsake you. Okay. And then the story of the faithful steward. Just two suggestions in closing. One would be, since these areas cause so many problems, cover them in your premarital sessions with your couples. Work through it with them so that they can get these areas working well. And the second is what Paul stole my thunder on, which is do set up a six-month appointment with the couples that you marry and tell them, for sure we're going to go over the four pillars of marriage. How's the household of faith looking? How is your commitment to love one another? How is the sexual relationship going? What's happening on the child front, or if they need to be adjusted on their thoughts about children? And then secondly, in that, also go through the things that are big problems. I would suggest perhaps even going through the 10 that are listed in the front of the handout, although some of those will certainly cross over. You have finances on there, but you also have debts and things like that. That can all be combined into one. But review those things with the couples 6 months into it, and then I would say a year into it. And really, I think you go every 6 months for the first 3 years, if that can happen. But just checking in with them so that they are encouraged to discuss these things with one another and work on them.